Fred Film Radio, Venice Film Festival, Italy.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the EFF, the European Film Forum, here at La Mostra. I'm Marjorie Payon, and I'm live, of course. We're also live all together from Venice here. You can, of course, join us in person here if you happen to be at the Excelsior or online on our platform, europeanfilmforum.eu. Because, yes, we as European can navigate the road to recovery, and even more, our cinema and audiovisual industry are bouncing back and reemerging in a more agile, innovative, resilient, and sustainable version. So this morning, we'll see the challenges and opportunities coming with our ecosystem's reinvention. We'll definitely dive in the financial and regulatory tools which can empower those changes. And we'll talk to the women and men leading this sector and who have implemented innovative solutions, which are worth looking at, of course. So you can, of course, join us and join the conversation on Slido, even here, if you have a chance to be in person with us. You'll have, you know, a chance and opportunity to ask your questions to our panelists. To do so, super easy. You just have, like, to scan this QR code or just, you know, when you're on Slido, get to the reference R1. 8 and 9, and you'll be able to post your question. I'll be happy, and I'll do my best, actually, to be your spokesperson on this very stage. Now that we're all set, let's open this edition of the European Film Forum here at the 78th Mostra with its president, Roberto Cicuto. And it's a pleasure to have you with us, as always, Roberto.
Pardon, first mistake. Benvenuti, welcome, bienvenue a tout le monde. Grazie alla Commissione Europea per essere fedele a questo appuntamento, per noi molto importante. Lasciatemi fare il presidente della Biennale di Venezia. La Mostra Internazionale d'Arte Cinematografica è, come sapete, parte della Biennale. E lasciatemi anche dire che vedere tante persone qui in sala, come le vediamo nelle sale di proiezione, ma come le vediamo anche alla Mostra Internazionale di Architettura che siamo riusciti ad aprire quest'anno e ai due festival che abbiamo già chiuso, quello di danza e quello di teatro, e dopo la Mostra del Cinema avremo il Festival della Musica, dire che, insomma, devo ringraziare, oltre al mio straordinario team e alle autorità che ci hanno accompagnato, tutti voi che siete altrettanto importanti, voi, il pubblico, i professionali, perché senza il senso di responsabilità con cui gestite ancora la presenza, che quest'anno è molto numerosa negli spazi della Mostra del Cinema e delle altre mostre, non potremmo realizzare questa cosa importante che è ritornare assieme. Che cosa è successo quest'anno rispetto all'anno scorso? Anche quest'anno abbiamo dovuto ovviamente mantenere alcune cautele, malgrado la tranquillità che ci danno i vaccini, ma è anche vero che quest'anno abbiamo delegazioni e personalità che arrivano non solo dall'Europa ma dal resto del mondo. Questo ha consentito, e faccio un riferimento alla tecnologia a cui stiamo ricorrendo anche oggi, un uso veramente importante e un grande supporto delle nuove tecnologie. Le nuove tecnologie ci consentono realmente di raggiungere tutti, ma anche di utilizzarle perché si possa facilitare l'accesso nei luoghi pubblici. Attraverso la tecnologia siamo riusciti a creare un sistema per cui assieme ai badge anche il famoso Green Pass è inserito e quindi c'è un solo tipo di controllo che fa risparmiare del tempo. Dico questo perché ci sono anche altre, come dire, modi di interpretare le nuove tecnologie come sostitutive del dover essere presenti. Questo noi lo rifiutiamo, lo sappiamo bene, ma non lo sappiamo perché dobbiamo difendere il nostro lavoro, perché vediamo come le persone partecipano a questi eventi, come anche dietro la mascherina si senta il sorriso, come siano contenti di confrontarsi con gli altri. Quindi benvengano le nuove tecnologie a supporto del sviluppo della cultura e del dibattito generale di cui questa occasione è un appuntamento importante. La Biennale di Venezia ha intrapreso quest'anno un importante percorso di raggiungimento di neutralità zero, carbon zero, diciamo. Che cosa succede? Succede che già da quest'anno stiamo lavorando per raccogliere tutti i dati necessari, possibili e certificati perché si possano mettere concretamente in atto delle misure di contenimento delle emissioni di CO2. Ma già quest'anno, che non saremo in grado di far vedere fisicamente queste misure, noi attueremo delle compensazioni economiche a favore di alcuni progetti già iniziati, europei e non solo, perché azioni di riduzione delle emissioni di CO2 possano avere anche il nostro supporto economico. È una cosa importante, è una cosa che facciamo in assoluta trasparenza e che avrà un programma che si tradurrà anche in protocolli. Protocolli per chi lavora gli allestimenti, per chi lavora perché gli eventi accadono, ma che riguarderanno anche il pubblico. E quindi anche una grande attività, chiamiamola formativa e di educazione. La Biennale di Venezia, come altri cosiddetti attrattori sul territorio nazionale, è beneficiaria di un importantissimo finanziamento sul PNRR, sul Recovery Plan. Un finanziamento che sarà utilizzato esclusivamente per investimenti infrastrutturali. È chiaro che una città come Venezia, dove si stanno raccogliendo tutte le criticità, e anche simbolicamente in un palcoscenico unico al mondo, deve, la Biennale in questo contesto, tener conto dei bisogni anche della città. Tutti gli investimenti che noi faremo nei luoghi della Biennale, all'Arsenale, ai Giardini, al Lido di Venezia, nell'entroterra, terranno anche conto di infrastrutture accessibili dalla cittadinanza anche nei momenti in cui le nostre mostre non sono in atto. È una cosa molto importante perché dialogherà con tutto, dialogherà con la possibilità di trovare sistemi non discriminatori perché un turismo di massa come quello di cui Venezia è testimone possa diventare sostenibile e tantissime altre forme. Nulla ormai può più essere, considerato come un unicum, tutto va legato agli altri, alle altre criticità. Quindi questi investimenti avranno ovviamente anche un importantissimo spazio per l'efficientamento energetico e dal prossimo anno questi protocolli saranno attuati. La società certificata RINA sarà riconosciuta internazionalmente il nostro certificatore. Lo dico perché riteniamo che sia molto importante documentare, far sapere alle persone che cosa si fa e quali sono i risultati di questo nostro fare, perché è troppo facile fare degli annunci e poi non farlo seguire da prove concrete su quello che si riesce a fare. Avete molti argomenti di cui discutere, l'industria audiovisiva, così come tutto il mondo della cultura, lo spettacolo dal vivo, ha passato momenti difficilissimi. Il sostegno dei governi è stato fondamentale. In Italia è successo qualcosa di molto importante, che era una grande falla. Finalmente è stato regolamentato il lavoro dei lavoratori dello spettacolo, quelli non assunti, quelli che subiscono di più le precarietà. Queste norme hanno riconosciuto ammortizzatori sociali, hanno riconosciuto un sistema pensionistico e questo penso sia stato una prova di sensibilità da parte del governo, ma anche una necessità che speriamo venga allargata a tutta l'Unione Europea e anche nel resto del mondo. Vi voglio lasciare ai vostri discorsi, al vostro dibattito, ringrazio tutti e vediamoci senz'altro l'anno prossimo. Grazie.
Thank you very, very much, Roberto Cicutto, for stepping by the stage. I mean, your planning is just like one of the presidents, so you have literally to run from meetings to screenings. Thank you so much again for your time here on this stage. And yes, we have everything. We have sustainability, we have technology, we have, of course, the recovery fund. So let's see during our debates how we're going to make the most of it. Thank you so much again.
Thank you, everybody.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to go for an hybrid, of course, edition. So our next guest is definitely joining us online, live from Brussels, Giuseppe Abbamonte from the European Commission, DG Connect, Director of Media Policy. Giuseppe, it's your time.
Buongiorno a tutti e un saluto da una Bruxelles finalmente soleggiata dopo una lunga estate autunnale. Sono davvero onorato di pronunciare questo discorso di apertura che farò in inglese, data la natura internazionale del European Film Forum. So let me first start by thanking Roberto Cicuto for hosting this event at the Venice Production Bridge and Biennale for the excellent cooperation. I am mortified, Roberto, if I may, not to be there physically and to do it at the distance, but you have my word of honor that next year I will do my utmost to be there and to meet you also in person. The Film Forum is an excellent opportunity to take stock of where we are and what are the challenges and opportunities identified by the industry at large in this, you know, peculiar time of our life. It is well known by now that the pandemic has profoundly affected the audiovisual ecosystem. Today, we can discuss the changes that are transforming the industry and how we can try and turn this crisis into an opportunity which hopefully will give Europe a sort of competitive edge. The European strategy is structured around two main building blocks. A modern regulatory framework which supports the creative sector and protects European citizens, and a financial framework that supports the recovery of the industry and its transformation, so to embrace digital technologies. So digital technologies are key to reap new market opportunities. And the financial support part of our strategy is at the heart of the media and audiovisual action plan, which was adopted last year by the Commission. So let me say a few words about the regulatory framework. So the recent audiovisual and copyright reforms have introduced a number of new requirements which apply to internet content sharing platforms, so the internet giants, and also to VOD providers, video-on-demand providers, with a view to creating a level playing field. Amongst the new rules, the Audiovisual Media Services Directive imposes now a minimum quota of European works on VOD platforms. So the minimum quota is 30% of European works. It also allows member states to impose financial obligations on VOD platforms targeting consumers in their territory. It is therefore important that all member states which have not yet transposed the directive, including Italy, do it as soon as possible, because it is an important, a very important opportunity for the Italian industry. The implementation of the new copyright rules also is fundamental in order to reinforce the position of European creators and the creative industries. In June, the Commission adopted its guidance on the application of the famous Article 17, so the value gap provision, which introduces new rules applying on online content sharing platforms. So once implemented, these new rules will increase the licensing and monetization opportunities for right holders, for European right holders, ensure transparency in the relationship with platforms, and protect users' rights. As you know, the deadline for the transposition, for translating the law into the European law into national law, expired in June. And I understand that the transposition process in Italy is well advanced and will be finalized. But again, my message is that the quicker it is implemented, the better. So now let me say a few words about the media action plan, the media and audiovisual action plan, and tell you where we are. So it was adopted in December of last year. And as I said at the beginning, it aims to help industry get back on track and also foster innovation in order to enhance the competitiveness of the industry. The ambition of the plan, which combines a range of EU programs which are relevant to the audiovisual industry, has been made possible by the addition, by the adoption of Next Generation EU and a reinforced EU budget for the period 2021-2027. I welcome that several member states have responded to the Commission call and included the audiovisual sector as a priority sector internationally, national recovery plans. It is the case, for instance, of France with the Plan Filière Cinéma, Spain with the audiovisual hub, and Italy with the plans for the development of the film industry, including infrastructure and studios, support to audiovisual heritage and training activities. And so allow me to mention in this context the Progetto Cinecittà, which, thanks also to EU funds, should revamp the historical studios and also address the digital and green transitions and skill gaps in the Italian, but also in the European industry, because you may have, you know, people coming to Italy to study, or films or production being shot in Rome. The Commission is making good progress in preparing and delivering on the concrete actions foreseen in the Media and Audiovisual Action Plan. And please listen to me carefully on this, because it is about financial opportunities, it's about actions which are in your interest. So first of all, we are now focused on the technical preparation to launch Media Invest, which is an innovative investment platform which is being developed in the framework of a new financial instrument called Invest EU. So this Media Invest will be dedicated, so will aim at leveraging private equity investment in audiovisual productions, for example, by reducing the risks associated with investments in film production and distribution. The estimated budget is 400 million euros over the next 7 years. So Media Invest will help pool more ambitious budgets on content with strong market potential. It's a little bit like the guarantee facility, which has mobilized a lot of loans, a lot of borrowings. Because of Media Invest and because of this equity investment, the attractiveness of some audiovisual content project will increase. We are now on track to launch Media Investment already by the end of this year with a kickstart funding from Creative Europe and Invest EU. So there is something buried in mind, something which is very, very important. I would also briefly mention that in the meantime, we have published online an interactive funding guide to help audiovisual companies navigate the funding European sea, and apply for tailored support across the range of EU financial programs. An important component of our vision is that the EU is ultimately seen as a sort of integrated single market for the production and distribution of audiovisual works. And this means further encouraging the co-productions, which travel better, and collaboration between market players.
Recording in progress.
And a wider distribution in order to improve the availability of content across national borders. As announced in the media and... As announced in the Media and Audiovisual Action Plan, we will launch soon a stakeholder dialogue with the audiovisual sector in order to agree on concrete steps to improve access to and availability of audiovisual content across the EU. Allow me to say that the availability of accessing content, accessing quality content, quality European content across borders is still an ordeal. The dialogue will allow to explore, together with industry, new forms of exploitation and distribution of audiovisual works, for example, to encourage online availability of films which have been released only in a few member states, or all films which are very difficult to get by. On Europa Creativa and the media program, so the Creative Europe media program is one of the key funding sources. The new budget of almost 1.5 billion represents a spectacular increase of over 80% as compared to the old budget. It is not just a sign of its relevance in supporting recovery, but also recognition of its success in instilling collaboration and innovation at European level. The renewed media program is in business, and implementation has already started. The first annual work program was adopted in May. It represents an evolution, and we have introduced some innovations, such as targeting the development of co-productions, supporting networks of VOD platforms, and supporting innovative tools, innovative storytelling, for example. A number of calls for proposals have already been published, for example, in support of cinemas, festivals, creation of content, distribution of films, and more. Important thing is that the call for cinemas, the budget for the calls for cinemas increased by 50%. And, you know, things are on track. So everything is in hand. Currently now, 9 out of 13 of the 13 media calls which were launched, and 1 out of 2 cross-sectoral calls have been closed, so were closed already. And something which is important is that in terms of expected number of applications, there have been just minor variations. So we are almost in a sort of business as usual scenario, which is good news. Another very important strand of the media and audiovisual action plan is the technological transformation. So a strategy of deep transformation is key for ensuring resilience of the sector and competitiveness. Data analysis for audience development, for production, and for the distribution of audiovisual work is a key innovation driver. So data analytics, the big data. Therefore, as part of the Media Action Plan, we have proposed the creation of a media data space. So there are data spaces, industrial data spaces everywhere. The time has come to have a sort of dedicated media data space, which would enable collaboration and sharing of audience or content data and metadata. The first call for proposals has been launched under Horizon Europe, and it regards the tools for the flourishing of this media data space, such as, for example, copyright management and data management tools. And the second call for proposal for the infrastructure, so for creating a secure infrastructure for the hosting and sharing of the data, will be funded by Digital Europe, and the second call will be launched shortly. We also believe that Europe can become a leader in immersive tech content, including virtual reality and augmented reality. I do not need to stress this here in Venice, where the Biennale has embraced virtual reality with vision and creativity now for a long time. So in line with the Media Action Plan, we are launching a VR, AR, so virtual reality and augmented reality industry coalition to stimulate cooperation across industry sectors. Our timeline is to hold the first workshops with stakeholders in October, in order to discuss concretely the objectives and scope, the strategic objectives of this coalition and the scope of our cooperation. We have also launched a VR media lab through a call for proposals under Horizon Europe. So there is another opportunity which aims to support the next generation of VR project in the audiovisual sector. Furthermore, as part of our comprehensive, you know, media and audiovisual action plan, we are active on two cross-cutting issues, so namely sustainability and diversity. Roberto Cicuto spoke about sustainability in his opening remarks. The EU has launched the EU Green Deal, and the audiovisual sector has an important role to play. We launched a green dialogue with the industry in June, and we are impressed by the wide consensus on two aspects. So the first is that the audiovisual industry needs to make its full contribution as a matter of urgency. And the second is that there is a need to cooperate at European level in order to be more impactful. We will now deepen the technical discussions with a focus on carbon, on the possibility to introduce a carbon calculators for film production, for example, and a sort of and the opportunities or the opportunity and the opportunities to introduce an EU green label in the audiovisual field. It is also necessary that the audiovisual sector embraces diversity and inclusion. And in this spirit, the European Commission launched in June in Cannes a vast awareness campaign on the inclusion of women in the cinema and the news media sector. And the name of the campaign is Scarlet Her. So in conclusion, I would like to quote Commissioner Breton's intervention in Lille last week, where he said that if we want to be stronger, we need to think Europe. We need to think at continental level, because we are a continent and we need to work together, capitalize on our strengths and taking advantage of our great internal market. So this is my main message today. Audiovisual companies should consider the European Union as their native market, a natural playground for the creative production and distribution activities. And of course, you can fully count on the Commission's full support to make this happen. Thank you very much indeed for your attention. Have a great day.
Thank you so, so much, Giuseppe. I hope you can hear the applause here from Venice. Of course, we were really focusing and trying to keep track of your intervention. A lot of solutions out there, a lot of tools, a lot of, again, solutions. We'll definitely dive in with our upcoming panel. Thank you so, so much. And thanks for referring to Series Mania and our little dialogue a little while ago last Tuesday in Lille, of course. And now we're getting back to in-person keynotes, opening speeches, of course, with Nicola Borelli, is the Director General for Cinema and Audiovisual at the Italian Ministry for Cultural Heritage.
Buongiorno a tutti. Io esporrò il mio intervento in italiano. E grazie a chi ha organizzato questo incontro, che ci consente di fare un punto a livello un po' più complessivo della situazione in cui si trova il settore culturale. Parlerò ovviamente soprattutto con riferimento all'Italia e con riferimento al settore cinematografico audiovisivo, che è il settore di cui mi occupo quotidianamente. Dovendo dare un'idea generale, senza andare nei dettagli, su cosa ha fatto, cosa sta facendo lo Stato italiano nel settore culturale, secondo me è importante dare alcuni riferimenti numerici, che come tutti i riferimenti numerici non racchiudono completamente il senso degli interventi, ma danno un'idea generale di come si è mosso lo Stato italiano in questa occasione. Allora, il bilancio del Ministero della Cultura, storicamente, se dovessi dare un numero numero di riferimento è circa 2 miliardi di euro l'anno. 2 miliardi di euro che comprende ovviamente i costi del personale, quindi diciamo non solo gli interventi veri e propri, ma anche il funzionamento della struttura ministeriale, che è composta ad esempio da circa 19.000 dipendenti su tutto il territorio nazionale. Ebbene, a fronte di un bilancio che negli anni scorsi era sensibilmente più basso, comunque di un bilancio che possiamo quantificare mediamente in 2 miliardi di euro l'anno, per l'emergenza Covid nel biennio 2021, al 6 agosto 2021, il Ministero ha stanziato risorse ulteriori per circa 4 miliardi. Quindi ha un intervento estremamente, estremamente importante, estremamente forte anche dal punto di vista quantitativo, che ha interessato tutti gli ambiti della cultura, ha interessato ovviamente il cinema, ha interessato i lavoratori dello spettacolo, e in questi numeri non è compreso un intervento strutturale sul sistema previdenziale e di welfare dei lavoratori dello spettacolo, con cui si sanano alcune, come dire, alcune incoerenze, illogicità oramai ultra decennali. Quindi diciamo in quei 4 miliardi questo intervento non è considerato, perché ovviamente fa capo al Ministero del Lavoro e della Previdenza Sociale e non al nostro. Allo spettacolo dal vivo, l'editoria, le mostre d'arte e quant'altro, quindi la tutela del patrimonio ovviamente, insomma tutta una serie di voci che vedono questo importo stanziato a favore del settore. In prospettiva, nel piano nazionale di resistenza e resilienza, rinascita e recovery and resilience plan, sono stati indirizzati al settore culturale 6,7 miliardi di euro. Confrontiamolo sempre col bilancio del Ministero standard annuale di circa 2 miliardi. E anche in questo caso gli ambiti di intervento sono impattano su tutto gli ambiti in cui il ministero ha lavorato. Quindi diciamo si tratta di interventi estremamente importanti, estremamente rilevanti, che danno contezza di assolutamente di un cambio di passo dell'intera compagine governativa, e mi verrebbe da dire anche parlamentare, dello Stato italiano rispetto ai temi della cultura, non solo del patrimonio culturale, una sensibilità come dire che c'è sempre molto forte nel nostro paese, ma anche nell'ambito delle attività culturali. Il cinema, l'audiovisivo fa parte, ma ne fanno parte anche tanti altri ambiti. Nel piano resistenza e resilienza, ad esempio, vengono, a parte il progetto Cinecittà, di cui ha parlato anche l'amico Abbamonte, ci sono importanti risorse per tutte le industrie creative, le industrie creative, come dire, ubicate sul territorio italiano, a prescindere ovviamente dalla nazionalità di provenienza. Oltre questo aspetto quantitativo, i cui dati sono facilmente reperibili una volta tanto sul sito del Ministero della Cultura, oltre questo dato quantitativo, il Ministero è impegnato in modo deciso anche a livello di regolazione. Nel Consiglio dei Ministri del 5 agosto 2021 sono stati approvati i decreti legislativi che recepiscono la direttiva sui servizi media audiovisivi e la direttiva copyright. Abbiamo tempo fino al 8 novembre, scusate, per l'approvazione definitiva, quindi diciamo entro la fine di quest'anno avremo approvato anche questi due importantissimi strumenti di regolazione. Stiamo andando avanti anche sul recepimento della direttiva SatCab e stiamo lavorando, lo diceva anche Abbamonte, come governo, in un gruppo di lavoro coordinato dal ministro Colao, nella fase ascendente del regolamento di ESEI, che come diceva sempre Abbamonte è un regolamento estremamente importante, verrà approvato, se non sbaglio, se non erro correggimi Giuseppe, entro il 2023, e dovrà integrarsi con gli altri strumenti di regolazione che da fonte comunitaria poi sono stati trasposti nel nostro ordinamento, ma comunque si tratta di un regolamento molto molto rilevante che impatta in molti ambiti della fruizione culturale, ma anche dell'offerta di contenuti culturali sulla rete. Quindi diciamo è un momento estremamente, come tutti i momenti di crisi, è un momento in cui bisogna non solo intervenire per minimizzare gli impatti terribili che la pandemia ha avuto in tutti i settori culturali, ma bisogna già iniziare a immaginare come questa crisi impatterà sui modelli di consumo da parte degli spettatori / utilizzatori di contenuti culturali, e adottare le opportune strategie. Noi ad esempio in questo momento e in Italia siamo estremamente preoccupati di quello che sta accadendo nella distribuzione theatrical di opere cinematografiche. I risultati non sono assolutamente soddisfacenti, sono addirittura peggiori di quelli dell'anno scorso, quindi vuol dire che è qualcosa di profondo che sta accadendo, è qualcosa di profondo a cui bisogna rispondere non cercando di riportare le lancette a quello che era prima della pandemia, perché probabilmente non sarà i modelli di consumo dei contenuti audiovisivi, quindi parliamo di questo in particolare, sono sicuramente cambiati e ben difficilmente saranno quelli che erano prima della pandemia. Quindi piuttosto che rincorrere il passato, cerchiamo di capire tutti insieme, e lo faremo, è l'agenda della mia direzione generale nelle prossime 3 settimane, cerchiamo di sperando che sia un tempo sufficiente, perché dobbiamo fare qualcosa velocemente. Le sale stanno soffrendo, la distribuzione cinematografica e le sale cinematografiche stanno soffrendo in modo notevole, quindi il governo sicuramente metterà in campo altre misure straordinarie, altre misure di emergenza, ma non possiamo continuare con misure straordinarie, con misure di emergenza all'infinito. Quindi dobbiamo cercare di reinventare anche il modello stesso di sala. Ovviamente non lo deve fare il Ministero, ma deve essere il settore che, andando a verificare che cosa vuole lo spettatore che va in sala, deve essere il settore ad adottare le necessarie strategie di coinvolgimento, e noi dovremmo essere bravi da assecondare queste nuove strategie di coinvolgimento del pubblico, degli spettatori in sala cinematografica. Quindi posso dire che il governo italiano, il Ministero, ha lavorato con un impegno notevole nel periodo della pandemia. Credo che una volta tanto ce ne dia atto anche l'intero settore. Non capita spesso, diciamo così, però in questo caso sento di poterlo affermare, ma siamo solo a metà del percorso, quindi molti sforzi sono stati fatti, molte risorse sono state messe a disposizione, ma è da questo momento in poi che dovremmo calibrare bene, coordinando tutte le misure e tutti gli strumenti possibili, anche in raccordo con gli strumenti comunitari di cui parlava Giuseppe Abbamonte poco fa, dobbiamo mettere in campo le misure più opportune e fare in modo che il nuovo mondo che ci sarà dopo la pandemia, quando la pandemia sarà finalmente finita, a questo nuovo mondo i nostri operatori siano in grado di rispondere in modo efficace e in modo di trovare sul mercato le fonti del proprio essere operatori economici e culturali. Ecco, grazie.
Thank you very, very much. I guess Mr. Borelli deserves some applause. Thank you so much, Mr. Borelli. So, yep, that's definitely set the scene for our debates upcoming there. I mean, a lot of information out there, of course. I guess that Giuseppe Abbamonte will be happy to know that actually the transposition of the SVMA directive is on its way, definitely upcoming here in Italy for November the 8th, if I'm not mistaken. And yes, of course, the word has changed, so one of the major questions we'll definitely dive in with our upcoming panelists will be this idea, if we can you know, like support this hybrid type of strategy that we are having from lockdowns in terms of heritage of you know, like new ways to have audiences meet compelling content, or if we have to support more theatrical windows. This is definitely one of the main questions we'll be diving in. Thank you so much again, Mr. Borelli, for your time on stage. And now, okay, let's switch to our upcoming panel. I mean, you're really from duty here on this stage. So if you want to, if you want to stay with us, you're welcome to stay with us, of course. But I mean, you need to go run. Okay, run. Let's go. So again, thanks a million for those opening, actually, keynotes and speeches. We are definitely going to switch to our discussion format. Again, an hybrid type of format here on stage. 3 in-person guests and 1 guest online, because yes, guess what? Studios, platform audiences, everyone craves European work. This is, of course, some great news for us. And this European content appeal comes at a time where and when lines between linear, online, and theatrical are definitely more blurred than ever. So the pandemic, of course, has shed a light on some dramatic changes on content consumption, of course, and also the way audiences connect with great content. So behind and beyond the short-term heavy disruption, how can the current trends dive and drive the future of innovation? Can they lead to a more resilient and competitive industry? This is definitely the discussion we're going to dive in, and to do so, this is my great pleasure to be joined here in person by our guest, Jan Runge, from Cinovate, Stefano Massenzi from Lucky Red, Troime Ripoll from Finmin. I'm really trying to not mess with your names out there. And of course, Marie-Isabelle Cote, the General Secretary of Arte GEIE. She'll be joining us live from Strasbourg in a few seconds. Please, gentlemen, grab a seat and grab a mic. You can open the mic if you want to join the conversation, of course. And Marie-Isabelle, of course, is with us live from Strasbourg. If you guys have a question or want to join the conversation, you know how to do it. You just have to scan the QR code out there for Slido and join us. And of course, I'll try to do my best to be your spokesperson here on this stage. So, all that being said, first question to you, and we're going to tour around the panel, maybe starting with Marie-Isabelle out there. Because yes, of course, I mean, the world is different nowadays than it was way before the pandemic happened. So I'm kind of curious of what are your takeaways from those past few months. Marie-Isabelle, how is your work at Arte different from what it was back in 2020 or before 2020 happened, actually?
Thank you. So hello, everyone. I hope you can hear and see me well.
Absolutely.
Great. So perhaps a few words before I come to your question, Marjorie, on what we do at Artists. While the streaming ecosystem indeed is becoming more and more complex, Artists' challenge is to become the European cultural benchmark label on linear and non-linear channels, and for most of it in 6 European languages. So our European demand dimension is already established thanks to the support of the EU for our 4 additional languages, which are Italian, Spanish, Polish, and English, since 2015. Our aim is to bring European quality content in a very broad sense, from performing arts to factual programs, information documentaries, European series, and of course, European movies. So we have an authentic European editorial ambition for a very long time, and almost 90% of our projects program are European. All the catalog is available in France and Germany, and 70% of it in all European Union and United Kingdom and the countries of so the EFTA countries. So we set on like linguistic diversity as well. We have 7 programs a year in 6 languages, and they're all offering in French and German. And 2 keywords are as well, which we heard already a lot in the keynotes before, co-productions, of course, and circulation of European work. So perhaps a few takeaways. So the panel this morning is about resilience. And I think everybody will agree that COVID crisis has been a test for all the society, but for the whole sector as well. For us, it's, and I think for all the streaming platforms, it's a bit of an ambivalent thing because media consumption increased massively during the pandemic. But so it's good. So we were able to reach out to new audiences, but at the same time, new difficulties occurred. So we think at Arte that the pandemic allowed our contents and our efforts to be more visible to the audiences. The audiences to enjoy our singularity, our eclectic cultural programming and its richness that enable us to enlarge our audiences, especially among young audiences. So the 15 to 35, which is a very good point to us, and to, and that's the case for all our vectors, so the broadcast and all our platforms and distribution vectors. So it's a very good point, and we want to capitalize on that, of course. At the same time, we had to adapt very quickly to a situation that was very challenging for the whole sector and, of course, as a company. Coronavirus forced cultural life, for instance, to shut down overnight. So we, as at Arte, had tried to play a big role to with the cultural sector to be able to bring performing arts to audiences. So we launched several initiatives last year very quickly, and we are continuously doing so. With concerts, for instance, from nightclubs all over the world, every night for a very long time, and from a wide range of operations that had a lot of success. And we were able to do that. We were able as well to innovate. We had to innovate in this time, of course, the home office situation, but more of that, the digitalization of some functions, so remote presentation, production in new conditions. There was some things that might appear very small that really give new opportunities from translated virtual meetings that enable us, of course, as a multilingual and multi-territorial company to work better together. And so we think it's those are new things that we need to capitalize on, and perhaps that we will be able to, thanks to those innovation and to this resilience, to cooperate better among Europeans, to co-produce better, and to make the circulation of European works work better. And I think a last point perhaps is that it enabled us to test things that might be of use in another challenge that we will have, which is to become more sustainable and diverse, of course. And I think we tested things that we will be able to build up and that can be of use for that.
Thank you so much, Marisabel, for those takeaways. So yes, we love to see the glass half full here at the European Film Forum. So let's see if our other panelists are that optimistic and have, you know, been able to use this pandemic as a test and learn experience. Probably let's start according to your part actually on the audiovisual and film ecosystem. Let's start with you, probably, Stefano, at Lucared. Of course, you are a distributor and you do consider distributing film as a publishing company, if I may. So what are your takeaways? Was it, you know, like this time to test and learn new innovative solutions?
Thank you. Yes, we are publishers. It's so true. And we have realized recently that we were publishers and not distributors, and there's a deep difference between the two words. So we are, as you said, distributors. We are also producers. So this period has been very different because, of course, in terms of production, there has been and there is a high demand. There is a high support everywhere, at local level, at regional level, at European level. In terms of distribution, it's been an interesting time and, of course, a very difficult time. I think there are two themes, two words that came out of the presentations. One is from President Cicutto that said presence. I think that as social animals, we need to get out of our houses and get back to social life. And this is the theatrical experience, which is completely different. The other concept that came out is from Director Borelli is that we need to analyze what is going on, because we, at this precise moment, we don't know what the future will bear. We don't know if the effects on the box office, to be very pragmatic, are stable effects, if people will come back, if they're just scared, if the mask is a problem, if being next to somebody else is the problem. In Italy, we have the privilege of having very serious limitation with a green pass to get into a theater, and that may be a restriction, a limitation, or maybe a help. The summer doesn't help, because in Italy the summer is not the best period to analyze data. So we will see the next couple of months what's really going on. What has come out of the pandemic is not the pandemic itself. The effect is not the pandemic, but it's speeding up a process towards the windowing, which is a big issue, because I do agree that we need to protect the theaters, but we came from one extreme and we're going towards another extreme, so we need to find the right middle solution. And there has been a speed that we've already seen coming regarding the fact that going to the theater is an experience that needs to be special, but in terms of content, more than the experience itself. The experience to go to the theater is different and has always been different and will be different in the future, because seeing a movie on a big screen is different than seeing a movie on your mobile. But there is more selection because there is competition. And the field is not only cinema. We have the platforms, but of course we have everything else. The concerts, the exhibitions, just going out, a drink, the restaurant. So it's a very strong competition on the use of leisure time.
And we'll definitely dive into more windowing in a few seconds from now. Thank you so much, Stefano, for those opening remarks. Let's actually travel to show me here around the table for Filmin, because I'm going to ask the very same question to a platform. Yes, a European platform doing very well, actually, with audiences.
So, yeah, I should say I'm optimistic, no? I'm from Spain, so summer in Spain is same in Italy, so not the best time for manager cinema and either platform. Yes, Filmin is a VOD platform, but we also are theatrical distributors, so basically we acquire rights and release those films exclusively on cinema, so we do support cinemas. Then we are also a production company, because we have just produced and co-produced our first TV series and our first four feature films. And then we run a film festival. So I would say it's like 360 platform, something like this, no? In the four sides. Yeah, the question is not, of course, for the during the pandemic, all the VOD platforms experienced like a huge growth. This is we already know that. The question is, what will happen from now on? We'll be able to convince our subscribers to keep the subscription now that the let's say the COVID is over, or at least over. How will we be able to manage the our platform in front of these huge competitors, global competitors? What will be the window in terms of for the window in release for the eight titles, let's say, so the blockbusters, but also those the small independent European productions. Basically, the 90% of the movies that are screened here in Venice, and the movies that probably are the core of our catalog. To be honest, as a platform, we need to focus on content, on cooperation, on marketing, on technology, on innovation. So those are the five key aspects in terms of filming. Probably we'll discuss further on those key aspects. In content, for a VOD platform in Europe, it's important to have exclusive content, to produce content, and to secure library and so heritage content. Second, in cooperation, work with film festivals. I strongly support the hybrid model for some of the film festivals. You can run a film festival as well. Work together closely with movie theaters. We need to keep listen each other and work together. So I think cinema experience is important. And as a VOD platform, we will have somehow huge benefits from a good theatrical experience. Let me give you an example, and I'll finish now, with Annette. Probably you know Annette. Annette is a Leo Carax movie. It won Cannes Film Festival, Best Director in Cannes Film Festival. Annette is a musical with Adam Driver and Marion Cotillard. We took the rights for Spain, all rights, and we released it in cinemas late August, on the same day that Amazon released the film online in the States. So filming decides to put the film in theaters instead of putting online. This is why it's important to have to still have local platforms for European territories. And good sign, we managed to do 40,000 admissions in Spain, which is a huge number during this time. In fact, we have doubled the number of admissions that the latest Leo Carax movie, Holy Motors, which managed to do only 20,000 admissions in Spain. So this is another way of cooperating with movie theaters. And in terms of technology and marketing, data, and it's important to be bold. In front of these global platforms, or you are bold or you are dead, basically.
Absolutely. It's all about the data. Thank you so much for those insights. And now, well, Jan, I know you're running Cinovate, which is an extraordinary innovation and innovative initiative when it comes to finding more solutions, actually.
Hello, thanks for having me. And maybe just a quick comment before I introduce the project on the excellent statements earlier on. I thought... you know, first of all, I think one should congratulate the European Commission and the European Union for increasing the budget of Creative Europe so significantly recently. And the money that went in, you know, from my cinema perspective into Europa cinemas definitely helped art house cinemas throughout Europe to come through the last 18 months. So I think that needs to be applauded. I do think that... you know, theaters will be a very big part of this new future that Mr. Borelli talked about. And cinemas are at the moment only, you know, on the road to recovery. And do you need to be closer to the...
Speaking okay. of recovery, yeah.
There and, you know, I'd urge everyone to work together to help rebuild the theatrical experience. That's kind of as an opening. I've been working with a number of organizations and benefited of the European Innovation Hub program, Cinemas as Innovation Hubs of Local Communities, and we basically put together a group of art house cinemas in Ireland, Access Cinema in Sweden, Folketshus Ok Parker and Folkets Bio, and in Slovenia, the Slovenian Art House Cinema Network, with together 300 screens. And we basically are going to set up a digital platform for them together with a German VOD operator, Rushlake Media. And that platform includes a number of different features, gaming, event cinema, the opportunity to book private screenings, so really helping those cinemas to re-engage with their audiences after the pandemic. And we're very grateful for the support that the European Union gave us for that.
And I guess also the entire question out there is to try to develop or reinvent or invent, per se, a user experience, if I can use some, you know, geeky type of vocabulary here on this stage, to actually, try to understand better what a theater of the 21st century could be or can be nowadays, right?
Absolutely. And I very much liked what you said, Stefano, about, you know, theaters competing not only with other entertainment options, but with, you know, the wealth of leisure opportunities that people have these days. And if you look into the, you know, in, I mean, this summer I know that in Italy cinema going has been relatively moderate, but in other territories, in the Netherlands, in the UK, in Scandinavia, where you know, there has been a lot of investment into the theatrical experience over the last 10 years, the numbers have bounced back pretty significantly. And if you look into what some cinemas are doing around Europe, it's amazing. They do compete with restaurants and other leisure opportunities.
Could you actually really dive into...
That's the challenge, really. It's not... There's no huge competition between video on demand and cinema. I think the two exist in one ecosystem. There's a competition between everything else that's out there these days.
I know you have a bunch of innovative examples. Could you just dive into some of those examples again, just to, you know, for some inspiration here?
So I'm also, I'll plug something here. I'm also the working for the International Cinema Technology Association. Each year we give out awards to innovative cinemas around the world. And I just came back from the Netherlands from a cinema called the Anything Cinema, and it's the first personal on-demand cinema in the world with very small screening rooms where you book your movie screenings in advance at the time and the date and the location where you want to see the film. I don't think that's the future of cinema, but that's certainly one future of cinema.
Yeah, but that's really interesting. I guess that, yeah, totally. I mean, we could use some of those innovative solutions out there to better understand what I mean, a theater of the 21st century could be, and this is more tailor-made type of experiences, if I can say so. So, yes, you've heard it. The question is definitely if, you know, like the new strategies out there, hybrid type of strategies, are compatible with streaming, theatrical, linear, and sales, because it's also huge part of the question out there. I mean, you've mentioned it, gentlemen, and Marisabel also mentioned it a little earlier ago. Of course, we are not, you know, getting out of this crisis than we were used to be connected to content anymore before. But, I mean, still, if we're seeing it from the perspective of, let's say, a streaming service, could be an American streaming service. Of course, I mean, European content is super appealing. We do understand why, European audiences, European markets. But still, I mean, the interesting point here is that talent seems to have, you know, like a falling out with their own studios and platform right now. We can, of course, refer to the Scarlett Johansson example with Disney Plus. She's not super happy that actually Disney had this idea of releasing in theater Black Widow at the very same time they're releasing it on Disney Plus. We can also mention Denis Villeneuve, who actually, you know, like made the news on Friday here at La Biennale and Mostra for, you know, openly say that yes, it would literally rather have Dune being first released in theater so that viewers can have this incredible theater experience first before having you know, consuming or watching Dune on HBO Max. What does this say from, you know, the mindset of the industry those days when talents are the very first to speak out there and say, yes, no, I'm not sure that this hybrid strategy still stand when theaters have reopened?
I may add something. On the other side, there are a lot of directors. They are pushing the sales agent saying, okay, if you're not selling my documentary or my film to a global platform, I won't give you my next film to you. So this is another problem. Probably a problem that somehow is not Dune. We don't have a Black Widow Dune problem facing this problem, at least in filming, Lucky Red and so on. But this kind of problems, so directors and talent, they are pushing for a global deal. And we need to, not of course we need, we like to keep local somehow, no? And regarding Denis Villeneuve, Scarlett Johansson and so on, I would say it's not my problem. Because probably Disney Plus and HBO and so on, when they will have this reach this 100, 200 million subscribers worldwide, they will say, okay, now stick to the to this 45-day window, so otherwise we'll still do 3 months, or day and date. It's up them. But in our case, what will happen? How will be able to manage to compete with this kind of releases with the European independent movies, no? Coming back to Annette's example. Uh-huh. So Annette has been released on Amazon, so basically it's available piracy worldwide. So to be honest, on August the 20th, the film is, if you want to download to watch Annette, in less than 5 minutes you'll be able to watch it. In our case, as a VOD platform, we decide, okay, still, we don't know that, but we still support local cinemas. And for that reason, I think sales agents have a key part in this ecosystem, and somehow we don't spend enough time dealing with them, talking with them, and discussing with them. Of course, maybe you can earn much more money now signing a global deal for a film, but on a mid-term and long-term, probably, if you don't give these gems, these masterpieces, these European titles to a local platforms, then with C titles or B titles, uh-huh. those local platforms or local distributors could not exist, couldn't survive. So this is another short sight on the Dune experience.
Well, that's really interesting, though, gentlemen, and Marisabel, if you want to take part to this discussion, of course, you can jump in anytime. But yeah, this is really interesting because, again, in this idea of a content industry, we can see that the industry part of it is still very much a question when it comes to, you know, again, having this incredible content and works being distributed and actually connecting with audiences. So, I mean, Stefano, what's your take on this?
Listen, it's what Helmut was saying. It's what's happening. You know, it is very persuading for an artist to have his film distributed in over 200 territories. We won't name the platforms because we can.
But we have them in mind.
We cannot advertise anybody, and we shouldn't. To, I don't know how many hundreds of millions of clients. But the question here is, these movies have been produced independently many uh-huh. times. And then they are shown and chosen. If we continue this way, the new voices, the new directors, where are they coming from? Because it is true that it's very persuading, but at the same time, if you look at the production, the local production also, of many of these operators, the cultural diversity level, the variety, it's not really there. So they are exploiting an existing ecosystem, which is made of many voices, of a lot of cultural diversity that has been developed, also thanks to the media program and to our local governments throughout the decades. Mm-hmm. But then it's about business. And so we are a little bit at risk. So the point here is the new window in. The experiments, it's all extremely interesting. But we risk to throw the baby with the dirty water, as we say. Because if we weaken the theatrical business, which is absolutely needed for a lot of content, especially for the European one, mm-hmm. Dune is made for the theaters, yes. But it's something that you can place it anywhere and people will watch it. Of course, the director is very keen and in his heart wants the movie to be shown on a big screen. And we can have a lot of examples of films that were also bought and financed by big platforms and were made for the big screen. And then they end on a mobile or on an iPad. Mm-hmm. But if we weaken that theatrical experience, we weaken the European industry in a whole, in the new voices especially. Mm-hmm. So it's like a panda.
Yeah.
It needs to be protected, not at all cost. So it's, you know, there's a lot of elements we have to consider. The element which is good for us, that I was mentioning at the beginning, uh-huh. of the fact that we are social animals and we like to go to the theater. But if we weaken these theaters with the day and date and all of that, that there needs to be a lot of thought around mm-hmm. it. And of course, the role, we have a role, but the big players play a big role in all of this, because the big numbers, if you look at them, are coming from the big films.
Absolutely.
Before, as Dune, yeah, you mentioned
totally.
As well.
Before we actually jump back to you, Jan, with you know more innovative solution and the voice also of theaters that definitely are weighing the this conversation. Let's jump to Marie-Isabelle, because I want to have the broadcaster perspective on this different windowing strategy out there.
So obviously I agree with a lot that has been said in terms of preserving and helping the theaters to bounce back after this very difficult time for us. So we work with the French Chronology and the German organization between theaters exploitation and then our exploitation. And I think for us, it's very important to help movies that haven't been released in other countries to find their audience in Europe. And we do that actually with quite a lot of success. So we have this initiative, Arte Kino, in which we work as well with theaters, and we offer once a month a movie of European origin. It's as well gender balanced with five female creator and five male creator making those movies from all over Europe. And we see, for instance, in August, I think, the Czech movie that we had has been our top two on our new languages. So, and it hadn't been released in several other countries we played in. So I think it's there is an audience for those movies, but I agree with what has been said in terms of preserving the diversity and regulating the platform so that those movies will still be visible or will have a space to be seen, which is not always. It's not just. It's one thing to display a movie, and it's another thing to really have the dedicated campaign in every country to help it find its audience. So, and that's what we are really trying to do with the help of the union. And I think it's there is an issue definitely in preserving diversity and being an incubator of talent, of new talents, because I think what has just been said is very important. It's that we need to seek diversity in young talents as well. And I think there is a risk if the regulation is not strong enough that we are going towards a system that won't allow this diversity anymore. So it's, I think it's there are lots of risks at stake. And for us, of course, the good work we've been doing with theaters and the good windowing in place is not that much of an issue. Much more the regulation and the relationship to global platforms.
Thank you very much. And of course, we'll get back to this question of diversity in a few seconds. I can see that you are keen on asking questions. I'll definitely take those in a few minutes. But first, I mean, Jan, your perspective, of course, on this question. And then I just have a brief question about the regulation coming out there.
On which question? On the question of release?
Releases? Yeah, exactly.
I think Stefano put it perfectly, so I wouldn't want to compliment that further. And I'm obviously, you know, I'm not speaking on behalf of cinemas. That's a job I gave up many years ago. But personally, I think when you talk about those kinds of productions, I'm certainly with the talent and think that those films need to be shown in the theater, and I think actually everybody will benefit in the end from it. There's many more areas where one can innovate and experiment next to release strategies. So I'll just point you to one feature of this project that we're working on. We're helping cinemas launch their own VOD services. And one feature of the platform is that with every fifth transaction on the service, the user gets a voucher that can then be redeemed in the cinema. So the idea is really to create synergies between video on demand and cinema, and also to drive audiences back to the cinema. And I think, you know, that is a space that distribution, exhibition, VOD platforms still have so much to work on and collaborate on, because for audiences, there isn't such a big distinction. They want to see a film, obviously, either in the theater or on VOD, but the sectors are still pretty siloed, and I think there's a lot of potential to bring those two worlds together.
Break those silos. Thank you so much. That's definitely one of the innovative solutions we are going to tackle in the next few minutes, because yes, when it comes to building an audiovisual sector of the next decade or the next century, let's say, we'll see, there's definitely a lot of different tools that we can rely on. Regulation is definitely part of it. Financing is also another one. Giuseppe Abamonte mentioned the Future Media Invest Fund, raising 400 million euros to invest in the sector. We also have other pieces of regulation upcoming. 6 months of discussion have been opened by Commissioner Breton on DMA and DSA, those are the Digital Market Act and the Digital Services Act, which are definitely going to weigh in the audiovisual sectors when it comes to setting up, you know, more coherent rules for every single stakeholders here in the digital ecosystem, and thinking about digital as one single market. Which tools would you actually pick up to build this brand new cinema sector for the next decade? Stefano first. You're my dedicated victim.
Thank you for choosing me first, always.
See?
It's not that easy, because, you know, in terms of production, I don't see big issues. I see issues in terms of content, you know, because it's not about the volume is there, and it's about what this volume contains. So that what the future bears for us, because of course, the tendency I see, but it's not that it's always been that, you know, it's a commercial tendency, which is fine, because it's an ecosystem where there's various worlds. We are here in the oldest festival in the world. It's called Mostra d'Arte Cinematografica. It's not a festival, it's an exhibition. So we cohabit in a world where there's Dune, and there's the movie that wins Cannes or Venice. And we cohabit and we fight many times for the same space. So it's very much about, and it's also coming a little bit back also to what was said just before. And I see now there's a question there. It's not about availability. Okay, it's about visibility, because the availability is there. All our films, all our catalogs are available to anybody through the VOD platforms and all of that. All these movies that are produced can be made available, but the visibility, the window, the so-called window space. A long time ago, I discovered, to my surprise, that a platform has a window space exactly as a cinema has. You know, I learned it because, you know, it's not our job, but they have 52 weeks a year like anything else. And this is the same for a platform, for a television, for a pay TV, for a free TV, for everybody. So there is a very high level of production at the moment. There's, I hear that the audiovisual industry in its whole is in, there's no unemployment. It's very difficult to find professionals, and that's good news. What we produce, what we will produce, is driven also by the choices of the winners on the market, because in the models. We're seeing, for example, in Italy, that the SVOD, the subscription video on demand model, is today the winner against on demand, and all the rest, because it's very flexible, it's all in, eat as much as you can, and, you know, it's see when you want, so it's very flexible. So also in terms of the European and the local national intervention, it becomes an equilibrium towards also how we can culturally preserve, which is not a great word when we're talking about the future, but we
and
need
you think
to preserve.
About preservation more
we,
than anything.
You know, it is important. It is important to preserve our culture because our audiences have asked and has shown. And also commercially, the platforms, or some of them, are coming in our territories and are asking a lot of local product because that's what the audience wants to see.
See, again, European content is quite appealing.
Yes, you know, from one world of globalization, we have shown in many fields of economy that, you know, local is beautiful. And, you know, it's not always bad because then, again, as we said, when the director wants to go all over the world and your film is chosen, you're taking your local film in the world. So there's a lot at stake. There's a lot of elements. It's a very, very complex world.
Absolutely, from local to global. Maybe let's bring in Maria's question. You were actually referring to Stefano a quick seconds ago. With such an enormous choice for audience on what means and circumstances of fruition of audiovisual works, how do you shape your offer to increase your audience and ensure proper visibility to your catalogs? This is definitely part of the question we're actually tackling right here, right now. Who wants to answer next? I mean, again, there is a lot of tools out there, a lot of question on the table, but again, I mean, how do we build this resilient, competitive, and sustainable audiovisual sector for the next decade to come?
Curation and marketing, basically. You need to create better and invest more money on marketing. Stefano was saying, okay, we need to invest more in few titles instead of spending like a small amount of money trying to market 52 films or 200 films per year, 200 releases per year. So then you need to focus and decide what is more important, which film is more suitable for your audience in front of the others. Secondly, it's important to keep in mind that there's no an audience. There's no, okay, this is a cinephile. There's like hundreds of kinds of cinephiles. There's people who love, for instance, classical music, plus documentaries about Second World War, or about technology. There's people who love Bellatar, Tarkovsky, and even, I don't know, Cronenberg. So then you need to suit your offer to address to a different audience and forget this, okay, this is like a cinephile. Filming is a platform for the cinephile. What does cinephile mean nowadays? And thanks to the data, you can somehow tailor your offer and tailor your market for those different type of audience that you already have. And this is an important aspect that we need to address for us to survive or for us to get more market. Then, secondly, in terms of cooperation and for filming, you know, filming is available in Portugal and Spain, and we should start looking to international expansion. Why not? Because filming is a platform that maybe we could do some nice work in other European territories. And this is another thing that maybe with the new media support we can address.
Absolutely.
And there's another thing which is important, and this was a small elephant in the room, which are the English subtitles. So it makes no sense for us to release a film in our platform, in our territory, and we are not able to put English subtitles in. We offer English subtitles. Why? Because sales agents and producers say you are not allowed to do it, only in for here in Italy, in Spain, Spanish, Catalan, Euskera, and so on. Because they are afraid of, I don't know, piracy, the competitors, but it's like an old rule that's still maintained, and we need to address this problem for sure.
They don't know the pirate subtitling groups subtitle in every language as soon as the film is available.
Oh, yeah. Marisabel, I thought you wanted to jump in the conversation on this one.
Yes. Exactly, yeah, because I think the issue of accessibility versus visibility is clearly like the major one for us. So we, as I said, we've had a strategy of making a lot of content available in six languages. So of course, I agree with Romé, the multilingualism is quite important, and everywhere in Europe, and that's been very difficult to do. But we now see that we need to bring really our strategy to the next level, where we are able to really be visible and make the content visible in every country. It's been the case for several contents, but we want to go a step further. I think for that there are loads of means. So for us, it depends a bit as well on what content we are talking about, because it's not always the same logic between movies or, for instance, we do performing arts as well. So it's you have to tailor that to the kind of content. But I think cooperation on national level works well. So we work, for instance, for the initiative I talked about, Artekino, with VOD platform on a national level. I think we've worked with Filmin in the past as well. We of course do events with theaters. That's what I said before, the good relationship we try to have with theaters. These local or national tailored communication campaigns helps a lot to give visibility. Of course, there is then the editorialization and good curation that will be languaged tailored or territorial tailored. So that's very important, and that's a lot of work if you think of the all diversity of languages and territorial matter in Europe. So I think it's a combination of all that, and I agree with Jaume as well. So the data, of course, play a very important role. And then this aspect of communities throughout Europe. So, and you can see that in several fields. Sometimes quite easy to gather a pan-European audience on opera, for instance, because you have opera lovers all over Europe, and it's how you cooperate with opera houses, for instance, that will help you to reach out to those communities all over Europe. And I think that's a point that you can apply in a different way, but which we applied as well to movie lovers. So our festival is definitely, I think, a label where we try to reach out to cinephile all over Europe. And I think this strategy of communities, which is in terms of communication, of distribution as well, because we try to reach out to several vectors, so being the desktop, the smartphone, the smart TVs, which you have to adapt per country. And that's basically really our goal, to work on this visibility and still have the accessibility in the next few years.
Thank you very much. Jan, do you want to address this question? Again, I mean, we have a lot of different tools here, so we can actually build, again, this audiovisual and cinema sector of the 21st century after a pandemic era.
Well, maybe just a point again on the, you know, on the issue of building visibility for European film, and obviously cinemas are the smallest part of that then, but I think cinemas are, you know, have over the past 10 years realized that they have a big chunk of work to do in the area of marketing, which they historically haven't done. And again, that relationship between distribution and cinemas is one that has great innovation potential when you look at data sharing, when you look at you know, the importance of building up your own customer database mm-hmm. with cinemas, and that actually will become much more important once cookies are phased out and movie marketing changes. So there's a big change coming in that area as well. And at the same time, as with with everybody in the industry. You know, you have to decide as a theater owner: do you invest all your time into marketing, or are you refurbishing your cinema so that people are coming back? So you're fighting on all ends, and that's a bit of a challenge to get the balance right, I guess.
Internal struggles, right? So let's see more of your question, actually, because you've been asking questions on Slido, and that's a very good thing. So I'll see how much I can be a spokesperson for you again on this panel. Maybe take the question. We have a lot of questions of Marco out there. So unfortunately, I can't take in-person question. You're definitely going to have to ask them on Slido, I guess for sanitary reasons. I'm not allowed to actually take in-person questions. So sorry about that. So one of the Marco's question, the very first one, is some of you mentioned the question of breaking silo. Definitely it was you, Jan. Is this a reaction to the pandemic or an acceleration of a pre-existing trends?
Well, I raised it, so I might as well answer it really quickly. I think it's the acceleration of a trend that's been going on for a long time. And, of course, I didn't want to make it appear as if those different subsectors don't work together, but there's always potential for improvement, I guess. How do you look at this as a distributor?
Totally. It's a pre-existing trend. There are many pre-existing trends. There has been an acceleration. So cooperation is the key. We've understood a long time ago, all the way from production down to television. Everybody's understood that without collaboration, you just have a product that is, you know, the lands in a world that is much more complex and with a client base that it's extremely complex and extremely divided. The other pre-existing trends is the one about selection. We are a funnel for the world of production that works at a completely different level, especially if you think of all the public money that is pumped into the system. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, economy, it's work, it's business, it's volume. But then we are the ones facing the audience. And we are the ones that are forced to select because, again, the other elephant in the room is the fact that not all movies are suitable for distribution. They might not be suitable for distribution at all, or they may be suitable for certain kinds of distribution. Theatrical distribution, it's very very smaller in terms of the numbers. Then you have television distribution, then you have platform distribution, but there is a huge, there is big production and a smaller gap where everything then goes. So I think that to realize that not everything can circulate is very important, because many years ago there was this issue: not many European films or audiovisual work travel. I've always said they do travel if they're good. Mm-hmm. It is not that there is the ugly exhibitor, the ugly television, or the ugly distributor. It's just the reality, because an Italian comedy won't travel in Germany and the other way around.
But if it's actually a great show and a great story to tell, right?
It will. It will. And we have examples.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah, we've promised you to take you behind the scenes of this industry, so it's definitely what we're doing out there with you, Stefano, especially. And brings us to the question of Lucia, actually. If local is beautiful, does it also mean that your local cinemas is also beautiful? And with the pandemics and global actors, what does local mean? Which is definitely a good question out there. Is this the idea of local or the real local experience? I'm not sure about the last point of the question, but still, I mean, this is definitely a great question. I mean, we used to say that local can grow global, and we have a lot of different examples when it comes to the series part of the industry, especially. Is it the very same thing with films and with theaters? Who wants to answer first?
I'm puzzled by the beautiful question, and I'll just pick up the element around the local cinema and refer to what I said earlier, that the cinema experience is changing rapidly. And if you go today into, I know all of you know, but if you go into a modern theater these days, you know, there's less seats in there, it's more comfortable, the experience is more immersive. In the best way, it's combined with a nice food and beverage offer. It really does compete with all the other leisure experiences, and I guess it's also nicer to experience a beautiful film in a beautiful cinema. And the rest I'll leave up to the other panelists.
But, you know,
that's wise.
A local platform, for instance, work closely with film schools, with new talent. Somehow they support, we support new talent. Mm-hmm. We cooperate with not only film festivals, not only movie theaters, but also other cultural entities, cultural companies. So like musical concert halls like Palau de la Música, like El Liceu, like Teatro Real, and with the newspapers, with local newspapers, we develop a close relationship with local newspapers. Therefore, it's very important to have this kind of local platform, even for us, even for Filmin. Filmin is local in Spain, but also local in Portugal. That means that it's managed by Portuguese people in Portugal, because for sure they will know much better how we work the Portuguese market in front of me, for instance, that I'm from Spain, and I do know better the Spanish market. And there's another key aspect with a platform like Filmin, and for sure like art, is the curational aspect. For instance, how we react, how we quickly react to the news. So the local news, like an elections, like a crisis, mm-hmm. like the death of an artist, and so on. And this kind of news somehow help us to promote some content, library titles, non-content maybe that hasn't been watched as much as we expected when we release it. And this is important for that, to have a local platform spending a lot of time on a local editorial content.
It comes back to the beginning of our discussion, publishers. Uh-huh. Publishers.
Yeah.
And that's what it is. To be a publisher is being local, because you're near to your audience.
But there's a problem. Not all the distributors are publishers, because this is a key aspect. Stefan was saying, okay, there's not a lot, not all the movies that have been made. We should find like a theatrical distribution. I agree. The problem is when some local distributors finally sign a movie that they are so-so. They're not so great, because the great movies are acquired by a global platform, by a major studio, or by a competitor. And then, of course, you still need content for yourself, for your company, to have a release. And then you know that the film is so-so, 6 out of 10, good. But you will spend money on it, and probably audience will get disappointed of the film. But this is... until the pandemic, probably this film... would perform okay in the cinemas. Nowadays, it's very hard to convince people to go to cinema to spend 8, 9, 10 euros for watching a so-so movie, a so-so thriller, a so-so biopic, a so-so drama. That's probably they waiting for filming on the other platform to release it.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, I mean, when you're on the content consumer, it's part of the equation, I mean, you know, ends up to the question of, okay, I don't have an unlimited budget to spend on content, so what am I going to do with this X, you know, X euros I have in my pocket. I mean, this is definitely not pocket money. I mean, in the end of the day, it definitely weighs on the monthly budget.
But the problem is not money, it's time.
Also, I mean, there's content fatigue that we definitely talked about earlier ago. Like, I mean, you guys have to compete in a 24/7 massive content offer, which is, I mean, and you not only have to compete with just pure films content, also with series. And again, those series have their own chronology. When we're talking back to the question of media chronology, which is definitely crucial out there to try to understand how windowing can actually work in the next decade.
Even audience demand in our subscribers demand for one new series per week, one exclusive title documentary per week, one exclusive movie per week, not to filming, but to the other platforms. Therefore, I need to provide them for like 52 series per year, 52 mm-hmm. Exclusive A titles for film. It's exhausting.
Let's see what Marie-Isabelle has to say about this, and then we'll take a question on diversity. And time flies on this set, so we're probably going to have to get to a conclusion.
Yeah, I wanted to react on the part of how, like, does every movie deserves or can travel in Europe and can circulate. So I completely agree that's not always the case, of course, but still I think that there are like structural issues that really are a problem for some movies to circulate and that could find an audience throughout Europe. So that's what we see is that I think it was a bit too harsh to phrase it like it was just now, because we see that, of course, co-production, they travel better and they don't always circulate throughout Europe. I think circulation is, and that's why I was saying it's not about the theater exploitation, because circulation can be on a longer run. So we see some series, some movies that have been released in several countries a few years ago and then can still be of interest for countries where they were not released. Where I completely agree is that it's really, again, the editorialization, the communication that really needs to be local, where you need, and that's what we try to build here, a multi-European team being able to really react to the news or to the context of one country in order to make this content more visible in this country. But again, I think that's not the case for every content, of course, and there are things that are too national or that can't travel, but still there is a potential of works that are not being exploited enough, and that's our aim.
Thank you very much. Let's take this question as a conclusive one. The question from Marco, another one. The question of diversity is emerging with more and more, I mean, as being more and more crucial, of course, but also with many facets or many aspects. Can you highlight how the search for inclusiveness and representativeness affects your business practices? Because, yes, diversity also means business at some point. Okay, you know, I mean, don't fight to actually answer the question. Yeah, sure. I mean, yeah, Stefano, my favorite victim.
Your favorite victim. you know, each player has his ideas, his editorial line. So it's very difficult to speak in general. There are the themes of inclusiveness and representativeness that are, you know, more dear to certain players. I cannot speak for ourselves because we're very diverse, extremely diverse. But you know, I don't see a huge issue. There are cultural limits. In the territories, there are cultural limits that don't allow certain movies to be exploited or shown, especially theatrically or also on television, because there are cultural limits from who you are in front and how you can exploit. Because the important thing that hasn't been said is that there is an economy behind what we do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, availability is one thing. Mm-hmm. To make a film available is one thing. But to make the, you know, the business or the number square and positive at the end of the year is another. And so there are investments that need to be recouped, and this has to be considered. So if you're if your client group is not large enough, if your ancillaries are not strong enough. And this is the problems we face every day. On every film, on every show we produce, we distribute, how can we recoup? How can we recoup our investment? How can we, on one side, find an audience, but at the same time, what are the limits of the market itself? Every market is different. So, for example, in our market, there's no place for the art circuit. You know, there's platforms, but they're like supermarkets where there's everything in. So you compete with Dune and with a film that is in competition or is in a sidebar in a festival. And, you know, it's difficult to find it in there.
And you're the boutique part if platform are supermarkets, you're the boutique compared to the supermarket of content?
Correct. It's the boutique. So you need those boutiques, but you need those boutiques also in terms of broadcasting, of SVOD, of pay, of free, and because those clients that are there, and they can be large groups, don't find an offer. So that's the issue and the answer on how we can achieve a larger inclusiveness and representation.
Time is really flying by. Super quick answer with you, Jan.
I just tackle it from another perspective because it's a broad term. So and only focusing on cinema exhibition, which, you know, historically is a very male-dominated sector.
That's right.
And it's slowly changing. I think some of the industry associations across Europe are addressing it with various programs to varying degrees of success. But if, you know, from a personal perspective, observing it over the last years, I think there's a lot changing at the moment, and that's, you know, very positive news.
Absolutely. Thank you so, so much. Super quick answer here.
Basically, VOD platform must play an important role in this inclusiveness in the all the European territory. It's not the same Spain than Poland, Spain than Hungary, Spain than Greece. So it's important for us to somehow to promote all these types, all these genres, all these new voices.
It's also a question maybe of European values in this global industry out there. Marie-Sabelle, we'll go to conclusion with you, if you may.
Yeah, of course, I agree with everyone else. It's a very big issue for us. It's a key role. It has a key role in our new strategic plan that was just accepted. We have a wide range of measures, and it's off-screen and on-screen. And I always underline that because I think what's on-screen depends a lot of what's happening off-screen. And that goes, of course, from diversity, European diversity, to inclusiveness more generally, to gender balance, and of course in the social responsibility we have the sustainable aspect that I mentioned before, and that's something we really want to prioritize for the next few years, so that it will be visible as well in the way we lead our offers.
Thank you very much. Behind the scene of our audiovisual and film industry and sector, well, I hope we definitely took you backstage for the past 60 minutes together here on stage. I guess all those great panelists deserve some applause. Thank you very much again for your perspective. Thank you so much for your questions on Slido. And yes, this European Film Forum is about to come to an end. And to do so, the concluding remarks will be delivered by Massimiliano Smeriglio, and is definitely a member of the European Parliament, a rapporteur for Creative Europe 2021-2027. Mr. Smeriglio, are you with us? Yes, you are. Wonderful. Or not. You know, technology, huh?
Eccoci, salve, buongiorno. Grazie dell'invito. Ho ascoltato in maniera attenta le due ore di discussione, per me molto utile ascoltare gli stakeholder. stakeholders, gli operatori del sistema, e ci aiuterà senz'altro a fare meglio il nostro lavoro. Ieri sera ho fatto un atto rivoluzionario, sono andato al cinema, c'era un buon clima, un buon flusso, sono andato a vedere il Mondo Cane, e secondo me alla fine elementi fondamentali della nostra discussione sono anche questi, e cioè come riattivare un meccanismo che è quello di fare ed andare al cinema dentro una condizione che è quella post-Covid, con conseguenze preoccupanti sul mercato, il calo delle entrate pubblicitarie. Solo un dato, i mezzi di informazione durante il lockdown hanno visto una diminuzione degli introiti tra il 30 e l'80%, le TV del 20%, il crollo dei ricavi del cinema con perdite stimate in 100.000 euro per schermo al mese durante il lockdown, le difficoltà delle produzioni che spesso ad esempio non possono contare su polizze assicurative idonee a coprire eventi come appunto la pandemia, e le difficoltà e le perdite dei posti di lavoro. Ecco, su questo io penso che noi dobbiamo un'attenzione particolare dunque ai lavoratori e alle lavoratrici dello spettacolo, che più di altri hanno subito la crisi, il lockdown e la pandemia. Noi lavoriamo anche per favorire gli algoritmi, ma il cinema non è solo algoritmi, sono persone in carne ed ossa, persone che ci mettono il loro lavoro, la propria creatività, e questo per me è molto importante, persone che si incontrano, che stanno insieme, come sta avvenendo in queste ore, in questi giorni a Venezia, come era accaduto a Cannes, e questo è un segno della ripresa, un segno importante, un segno di fiducia, anche se i problemi ancora permangono. Penso appunto alle difficoltà, al drastico crollo delle entrate al box office. Solo in Italia si è registrato un decremento di oltre il 71% degli incassi e delle presenze nel 2020, o l'interruzione della catena di fornitura dei contenuti, oppure il boom dei servizi di streaming. L'intrattenimento digitale del 2020 vale 61,8 miliardi di dollari, 5 volte in più del box office, sceso da 42,3 a 12 miliardi di dollari nel 2020. E ancora permangono i problemi legati alla pirateria, che è un aumento da 69 milioni a 243 milioni, che si è riscontrato nel numero degli atti di pirateria verificatisi durante i mesi del lockdown e della primavera del 2020. Questo solo per stare alle questioni grandi che abbiamo di fronte. Io penso che il Parlamento europeo, la Commissione, il Consiglio, le istituzioni europee nel loro complesso hanno dimostrato di esserci complessivamente per contrastare la pandemia e la crisi post-pandemica, ma esserci anche sul terreno culturale dell'audiovisivo e del cinema. E c'è anche il Parlamento come luogo di presidio, di discussione, di monitoraggio e di indicazione. I risultati sono evidenti, penso ai piani nazionali, ai ricoveri nazionali, penso anche alle scelte del bilancio ordinario dell'Unione, come abbiamo fatto con la nuova programmazione di Europa Creativa 2021-2027, in particolare con la messa a disposizione di risorse importanti. Il settore può contare su una dotazione complessiva di 2,4 miliardi, di cui il 58% a favore del sottoprogramma Media, con un incoraggiante incremento del 63% rispetto all'1,4 miliardi del periodo precedente. Quindi bene le scelte sul bilancio ordinario dell'Unione, con Europa Creativa, ma aggiungo anche con i cluster specifici sulla creatività, le industrie creative, l'audiovisivo di Horizon. Bene le scelte, diciamo, eccezionali, presenti nel recovery plan e nei PNRR nazionali, anche quello italiano, come abbiamo visto sulle scelte di sostegno alla cultura e al turismo, all'audiovisivo, gli impegni presi dal governo italiano positivi su il rilancio globale di Cinecittà, oppure anche tutta la discussione accennata da Bamonte sul regolamento del copyright e il rapporto con le piattaforme, con l'intenzione di tutelare i produttori di contenuti, quindi ancora una volta le persone. Oltre a questo, il nuovo piano d'azione per i media e gli audiovisivi proposto dalla Commissione lo scorso dicembre, un programma di intervento sicuramente ambizioso, nato con l'obiettivo di fornire sostegno concreto alle imprese dell'audiovisivo e accelerare il processo di trasformazione di tutto il comparto. È positivo poi che il piano metta al centro la tecnologia digitale, un accesso ai finanziamenti più semplici, lo stimolo degli investimenti privati, con l'obiettivo di favorire un maggiore livello di resilienza e sostenibilità ambientale. Il Parlamento ha accolto positivamente l'approvazione del piano e ne seguirà con attenzione l'applicazione nella sua interezza nel corso dei prossimi anni. In particolare sono positive quelle azioni che mirano a creare un dialogo vero con l'industria audiovisiva al fine di migliorare l'accesso ai contenuti in tutta l'Unione Europea. O anche progetti accessori come il rafforzamento dell'alfabetizzazione mediatica, dotando i cittadini europei di maggiori strumenti e capacità. Tra le 10 azioni proposte, in particolare ritengo che la creazione della piattaforma Media Invest sia tra le più rilevanti e in grado di produrre risultati concreti a vantaggio dell'industria audiovisiva europea, caratterizzata da numerose imprese che hanno le potenzialità per crescere a livello internazionale. Ecco, e poi per consentire una solida ripresa è però necessario porre al centro la legalità e garantire un corretto sfruttamento delle opere, poiché è in un contesto certo di regole che sarà possibile tornare in tempi rapidi a numeri pre-pandemia nel settore audiovisivo. Uno dei pilastri su cui lavorare per concludere in tutte le fasi della filiera è senza dubbio l'innovazione e la qualificazione dell'esperienza, tenuto conto che lo scenario competitivo è condizionato dalle alternative del tempo libero. La produzione dovrà fare leva sulle nuove tecnologie per abbattere tempi e così utilizzando nella preparazione di un film tecniche di realtà virtuale aumentata. Queste sono già operative da anni, diffuse nelle produzioni di videogiochi, ad esempio, per i quali l'atmosfera immersiva abilitata dalla realtà virtuale è motivo di attrazione presso il pubblico. Io vi ringrazio per l'attenzione, vi ringrazio anche per queste due ore intense di scambio di contenuti. Sarà mia cura tenere aperti tutti i canali di dialogo, di ascolto, di raccoglimento di proposte con tutti gli stakeholders del settore. Buon festival a tutte e tutti e grazie di nuovo.
Thank you very, very much for those conclusive remarks. And yes, that's the way our European Film Forum Most Tried Edition is coming to an end. Thank you so much for the perspective of our incredible panelists and guests today. Thank you very much for you attending here in person at the Excel Shore. And thank you very much to those following us on live streaming on our platform, europeanfilmforum.eu. Well, we'll, you know, like see you at another event for more on the European Film Forum. Thank you so much.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.